We ask you to take get one of the anybody needs an outline still, kind of a listening guide, or so you can think about the questions I'm going to try to raise as we go along. I realize I have more material with this than we'll have time to cover, but in fairness to me, if you'll think about how much of the four gospel accounts is really occupied with the last week of the Lord's ministry, you'll find that at least a third of the material altogether is involved with that. And so I've got it boiled down to the front and the back of a page, so that's pretty good, really. All right. I've noticed that my title for our class today is Houses into Which the Lord Was Taken. And my first question is, what does the use of that word taken suggest to you? What does that bring to your mind immediately when we begin? All right, he didn't go on his own. Only way you can be taken to someone's house is if you're a little child and you have no choice about it, or if someone takes you against your will. And in each one of these cases, if you think about it, the Lord goes bound as a prisoner. The idea is either we have power over this guy or we're afraid of what this guy might do. So we have to treat him this way and bind him and lead him around and make a display out of him and all of that kind of thing. So that immediately sets the tone for our study today. Jesus is treated differently now in these four cases than any other place we've seen him, any other home we've seen him so far. Now, I use the word house, but it may be in all four of these cases that the occupants were living in more official type residences. In other words, in each one of these four cases, you might should think of something more in terms of a palace where rich and powerful people are housed. And at least in two of these cases, it may be that they were, the places were more in line of what was called with the governor's case, the praetorium, or what was called in the king's place, the palace. It has a word, and I didn't write it down, and I can't remember it right now, but the palace idea. And it may also be that in two of the cases, it was actually the same building. You'll see why I say that in a minute here, but this means that not only is Jesus treated differently, but the surroundings in these four cases are also quite different from the other residences that Jesus has visited. Now, I think it'd be good for us to set the stage with the three verses that I've mentioned, number three on your guide there. What issues can we identify from Matthew 26 there that will sort of form the background of our discussion today? And then if one of you would look up Luke 3, Brendan, you get Luke 3, verse 1 and 2, really. And Acts chapter 4 and verse 6. Russell, you get that one for us, if you will. Becky, you get Matthew 26, verses 3 and 4. And there are at least two or three factors here that I want us to be aware of to start our discussion today.
Okay. Then the chief priests and the elders of the people were gathered together in the court of the high priest named Caiaphas, and they plotted together to seize Jesus by stealth and kill him. That they were saying, not during the festival, lest a riot occur among the people.
All right, now, we want to be aware of who these people are. We have, first off, the chief priest, and who else does it say with them there? And scribes. All right, so we have here the official leaders of Jewish life at the time, the the chief priests were the people who occupied, excuse me for my scribes I didn't hear, they were more like scribes, but the chief priests were the people who had the official influence at the time of Jewish life. Ever since really about 165 BC, when the Maccabean revolt occurred and Syrian influence was overcome for a while, or at least mostly in Jewish life, and the so-called Hasmonean dynasty held authority in Jewish life during that period of time, all the way from there to the Roman conquest of Palestine in 63 BC, these people held sway. Now, not all of them were noble people. And they may have revolted to start with for very good reasons to restore faithfulness to God, but what happens in the meantime is they begin to compromise and accommodate and protect their position in life. When the Romans took power in 63 BC, they entrusted Jewish life to the dominance of priestly families, actually five priestly families during that period of time and through the time of Christ, who held sway. And they became wealthy and powerful. And their interest got to be to, how do we keep the Romans from coming and taking our place away? They had a comfortable and profitable deal. And by the way, they were Sadducees. They were the Sadducees party, which meant that rather than being the separatist and the holy, keep ourselves apart from any uncleanness like the Pharisees did, the Sadducees wanted to accommodate, to get along with Roman power and with the system. And instead of thinking in terms of a resurrection of the dead, like the Pharisees did, and a reward there, the Sadducees believed there would be no resurrection, and so you got your reward here. And you can see the two lines of thought. So we have these people gathered, and then notice that you have the mention of the palace of the high priest. This is the ESV translation that I'm using here, but what does that tell you now? The high priest is the main ruler in this case, and that he has a palace tells you what?
Rich.
All right, he's rich. That he is prosperous. If you let this in your mind's eye, if this represents the Kidron Valley in Jerusalem, and if the temple mount is located about here, then usually the thought is that the Mount of Olives, the steep hills over here, this would be Mount Zion here, and the old city of Jerusalem. No one knows for sure, but the supposition is that the high priest's house would have been on the mountain here, in that part of Jerusalem, looking over the temple location. People believe that the palace of Herod Antipas would have been located here, and then that Pilate's fortress, which would have been the old palace of Herod the Great, possibly, was located in sort of there. So the Garden of Gethsemane would have been across the ravine and over here somewhere, and if you can kind of, the temple would be facing east inside that compound. That would be something of the layout of the situation at the time. So you kind of bear that in mind as we go along. Then this high priest's name was Caiaphas. Caiaphas was the longest running high priest in the first century. He managed to hold power by some means from 18 to 36 A.D., And you'll get some of his thinking as we go along in this lesson that we have outlined here. That this man's character will become fairly obvious to us as we read along. The important thing right now is to remember that Although Caiaphas was the official high priest to whom the Romans looked for the say-so in Jewish life, the real power was the patriarch of this family, whose name was Annas. Annas had been the high priest from, I believe, from 8 to 15, or from 6 to 15 A.D., something like that. But notice from Luke 3 and verse 2 and from Acts 4 and verse 6 what we learn about this family. Who has Luke 3? Brendan? 1 and 2, please. Yes.
Now in the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, Pontius Pilate was governor of Judea, and Herod was tetrarch of Galilee, and brother Philip was tetrarch of the region of Iturea, and Trachonitis. Licinius was tetrarch of Abilene. The high priest of Annas and Caiaphas, the word of God came to John, son of Zacharias, in the wilderness.
All right, and notice carefully that the events of the ministry of John the Baptist and of Jesus are set in very real historical circumstances. And then notice that there is a secular historical setting in which all the Roman authorities and so forth are mentioned. And then there is a religious or a Jewish setting in which it's during the high priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas. Okay? And that's literally true. Caiaphas, as I said, held power till 36 A.D., which, by the way, is the same year that Pilate ends his governorship. That's an interesting thing. Now, so you can see how it's identified. Look at Acts 4 and verse 6. And what I want you to notice here is when I say that Annas is the patriarch of this priestly family that had the lease on power from the Romans, so to speak, there are, five men, I think, who are either Annas or some of his sons, or in this case, his son-in-law, Caiaphas, who at some point or another are identified with the high priesthood. Okay, Russ?
Annas, the high priest, was there. So were Caiaphas, John, Alexander, and the others of the high priest's family.
All right, now, how many are mentioned there? There's Annas, Caiaphas, John, Alexander, there's four of them there. Is that right? All right. And by the way, they're here gathered to see what they can do to hush up Peter and John preaching the name of Christ. That's kind of a sad thing. They thought, I'm pretty sure that they thought when they led Jesus out of Caiaphas' house and sent him off to Pilate, they were done with him. You're never done with Jesus, folks. I want for us to be aware of that. You're never done with him because he lives. And so this is a case where you'll see that. All right, now, what I've tried to do is to take these five scenes. There are four houses now. One of them gets visited twice. And one of them is not actually, we're not told they went into this man's house, but you'll see that it's implied in the story as we go along. Let's start now with the house of Annas, John 18. This happens, remember, this all of these things are in the space of one night and then the morning of the next day. All of these things happen after the supper and the prayer and the events in Gethsemane and immediately following the arrest of Jesus. That's the time between that moment when Jesus is arrested and that moment when he is scourged and sent out to be crucified. What does that tell you? If you visit four houses in that period of time and one of them twice, what does that tell you? He didn't go to bed. It's a very hectic and exhausting time. How many of you conduct your official political business in that kind of time frame? It has to tell you that all of this has been set up, doesn't it? And you can imagine what it's like for Jesus being manhandled and shuffled along with hands bound and so forth from one of these places to another and then insulted in every way you can be as you go along. Think about that while we study. All right, let's take the time to read this one. Randy, John 18 for us, verses 12 through 14 to start with.
The band of soldiers and their captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. First they led him to Annas, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. It was Caiaphas who had advised the Jews that it would be expedient that one man should die for the people.
All right, now we'll stop there for a second. Randy, just save your place and we'll let you read the other part just a second. Notice in what's read what role Annas has and why was Jesus taken to him. Alright, he's not the high priest, but he's the father-in-law of the high priest, and therefore the one who it got handed along because of the Roman power. But the Jews may still have regarded the head of the household as the one who held sway. And the reason, I mean, I've asked on the paper, we're not told here, but why was Jesus taken to him first? Because he was regarded as the influence, and you have the impression that this is regarded, is going to be tried to be passed off as a religious matter. You'll see that in Annas' questions in just a moment here. What interesting detail about the high priest or about this house is suggested in verses 15 and 16, and also about one of the Lord's disciples. We didn't read those two verses. Take a look at them. And really about the nature of the layout of the house, and then about the connection between one of the Lord's disciples and Annas. What are the implications there? All right, one is that one of the disciples who's just described here is that disciple. Was known to the high priest. In other words, there was an acquaintance between, and this disciple is referred to again in verse 16 as having gone outside and gotten Peter in. So, can anyone why would someone be referred to as just that disciple and not named? In what circumstances in the New Testament writings does that occur? All right, when the writer is talking about himself normally. And so I think we're together that John was acquainted with Annas, or Annas with John, so that John was able to go in with the crowd when they got Jesus to the high priest's house. That's an amazing thing, because at the Garden of Gethsemane, they'd all fled. And Peter has followed too, and he's brought in. Now, what about the architecture of the house here? Do you notice? As a courtyard. Now, this will play an important part. The houses were constructed with the courtyard. You're going to see that this house here was more than one story. That would mean it was a very well-to-do situation. The courtyard was simply enclosed. It's not like your front yard at one of your homes today, but the house was built maybe with walls around this courtyard. And one of the things that you're going to need to know is that the faithful Jewish authorities at the time could not enter a Gentile's house, but if they could enter an unroofed courtyard. Alright, that will be important later on. This is an unroofed courtyard area where the crowd gathers when Jesus has been taken into Annas' house. Now, Randy, skip on down to verses 19 to 24. Read them for us.
The high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. Jesus answered him, I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple, where all Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. They know what I said. When he had said these things, one of the officers standing by struck Jesus with his hand, saying, "Is that how you answer the high priest?" Jesus answered him, "If what I said is wrong, bear witness about the wrong. But if what I said is right, why do you strike me?" Annas then sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest.
All right, now think about that for a second. What was the nature of the questions that Annas put to Jesus? We're told two things he asked about. All right, his teaching and his disciples. So this would be sort of in keeping with what we've found out in the rest of the Gospels about the objections of the Jewish leaders. That is, why do your disciples do or not do these kinds of things? And where do you get the authority to teach these things? So those are the same things. Now notice that at least on the surface right now, this is a religious examination. What gives you the right as a rabbi to lead disciples around, and why do your disciples not uphold the traditions of the fathers? And where do you get the authority to teach the kind of things that you have been teaching? What about your thing? Now, what else do you notice about his questions? They're not specific. There is not a specific accusation in it anywhere. There is not something that Jesus can answer with a yes or a no to it. And so, describe the Lord's answer to Annas. How do you answer just the general, "I want to know about your disciples and your teaching"? How do you answer that? All right, you can. You know, I haven't been teaching on Facebook with everybody blocked out. I've been in the temple. I've been teaching, and literally had been. Remember, every day that week, and the crowds around, and everybody had a chance to ask him concocted questions. You know, like they've been doing. We studied some of them last week. So this has all been done out in the open, and all Jesus is saying is, maybe some of these officers here, and maybe even some of Annas' own family has been around, the Sadducees got to ask him questions too, maybe they already knew, and maybe Jesus is saying here, you know, ask the people who've heard me teach, at least come up with an accusation. And what happens right then? How's Jesus treated? All right, and I've asked, how does the officer's treatment of Jesus, what does that tell us about the attitudes of the priestly family at the time? Josephus, the historian, by the way, bears this out. All right, they are not exactly, they don't see themselves as bound by law, necessarily. And also, what kind of attitude would you have to have when someone has just said, I've spoken openly, why do you ask me? Why? What kind of an attitude would you have to be offended at an answer like that?
He's already condemned, so they're not really looking for answers.
He is condemned, and they're just looking for excuses, that's right, but... Okay, Brian?
Well, the high priest was really a servant to the people, but he's made himself a ruler over the people.
All right. There is a superiority, an arrogance here, which is offended if anybody puts him on the spot or anybody requires any answer of him. It's like I'm the one asking the questions here. I have to answer any of them. You can see the human nature part of that, and maybe the mindset that comes from having power and prosperity like Annas has had for such a long time. Now, it says in verse 24, they sent him bound to the high priest Caiaphas. I just want you to notice from verse 12 and 24 that being bound is how he got there and how he went on. Now, I want to mention as well that some scholars believe that Caiaphas and Annas lived in the same house or the same palace, that since they were connected family-wise and so forth, that there is the possibility that it just is sent from one place to another, and that Peter, in other words, remained in the courtyard during that whole, and there wasn't a move from one place to another. And that's important because Luke tells the story of Peter's denials in the courtyard all the way through before he then goes and tells about the others. And Matthew and Mark tell them divided up a little bit. And I'm just pointing out that there's not necessarily a contradiction between that. Let's look at Caiaphas for a moment. And rather than try to read the whole section, I want to ask a few questions as we work our way through it. Luke 22, verse 54, I've asked about this just because it mentions specifically the house. Luke 22, 54, he's taken, they seized him and led him away, bringing him into the high priest's house. So I'm just pointing out that apparently Peter and the others are in the courtyard, but Jesus is actually taken by the officers into the house where the high priest lived. So we kind of have at least two of the disciples have tried to come along as far as they can, but Jesus is taken by the authorities on into the house. Now, this Caiaphas is, I want to mention a couple things to you. We know from the passages Brendan read a while ago and Russell read that these men were well known. One of the interesting things that's happened in more recent times, at least interesting to me, in 1991, archaeologists, in excavating a burial cave in the region of the temple area in Jerusalem, uncovered an ostuary or a fairly fancy bone box, and it had the crude engraving in the side of the stone, Joseph Caiaphas. And isn't that an interesting thing? There's all kinds of supposition. Could that have been this guy? Could that have been his remains? What would happen for the more wealthy Jewish families is the body would be wrapped and all that kind of thing and laid in the tomb as with the burial of Jesus. And then after the time of decay has passed, was passed, the bones would be gathered up and kept in an ostuary or a bone box. And it's an interesting thing if maybe this could be the same guy in which our Lord, whom he sent to the cross, lives at the right hand of God, and in which Caiaphas lives in a bone box. All right. What do we learn about the character of this guy from the two passages in John that I've mentioned? You can see a little bit about how he keeps his power here. John 18:14, what did it say about Caiaphas? It was Caiaphas who did what? All right. And he wasn't talking about an atoning sacrifice either when he said that. But if you look back with me to John chapter 11, verses 47 to 50, right after Jesus raised Lazarus up from the tomb right out there in front of everybody, and people were believing in him, and the council gathered, the chair of which was apparently the high priest, by the way, the Sanhedrin, the council of 70. What are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come. What's Caiaphas' chief concern? The Romans will come and take away our place. Our place is what? As rulers, as the right, the high priest, the priestly family was given the right by the Romans to take care of the affairs of the Jewish nation, the Jewish people. And we're going to lose our place. And so look at Caiaphas, verses 49 and 50 of John chapter 11. This tells you about all you need to know about him. Somebody read that out loud for us.
And one of them, Caiaphas, being high priest that year, said to them, "Know nothing at all, nor do you consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and not that the whole nation should perish."
All right, and what kind of picture of him do you get there? What about in the "you know nothing at all" statement? All right. I've got this figured out. I'm a lot smarter than the rest of you poor dumb guys. And I haven't gotten to this place, my place, for nothing, even though I'm married into it. I know how to keep it. And then he advises that one should die. What did Caiaphas mean by that?
If you're the leader, then
all right, if we will kill him, the problem goes away. Now, it never crossed their mind. We're talking about killing a guy who just raised a man from the tomb who's been in 4 days. That could have been a dangerous line of thought if it had been considered. In other words, the way the scripture tells it, who is the moving force behind the movement to kill Jesus? Caiaphas. All right, this man here. All right, now look, Matthew 26, verse 57. Look at it with me for a second. Okay. I've asked, based on Matthew 26, 57, what does it tell us about why they took Jesus to Caiaphas? All right, the scribes, it says the scribes and elders had gathered. All right, now why at that time of night? One thing we know, if this followed the supper and upper room and all the stuff that happened at Gethsemane and the arrest, and then they bring him from Gethsemane here, back across this steep valley of the Kidron and up around the temple area and over to the high priest's house. That took some time, so it's got to be way late at night now. Why are these guys at Caiaphas' house? And how did the people who arrested Jesus and brought him there know they would be at Caiaphas' house? All right, this has been planned ahead of time, hasn't it? All right. Verse 1 of chapter 27, I think, probably suggests it's not all of them. But they're the ones who are willing, who are close enough by, and this has been prepared where there'd be enough of them to come up with a religious ground from which to condemn Jesus. Now, where was Peter during this time? They just tell you, since you're filtering away on me. Have I had one bell or two bells? Travis, you can't go. Okay. He said he's leading singing, so I taught him that. The thing I wanted to point out from Mark 14, verse 54 and 56 is that it says that Peter was down in the courtyard. He was below in the courtyard, and that suggests something about the nature of the house they were in. And Peter had been gotten into the courtyard by John, apparently, and then he sat there in the fire. And while we remember what happened with Peter after this, what does it tell us about Peter that he was even there? You follow, Peter followed a man who was bound and led away. So what does that tell you? All right, he had all good intentions, didn't he? And there is some courage on the part of this man. And here he is separated from Jesus. What was the council doing inside the house? And look now at verses 59 through 61 of Matthew 26. 59 through 61. Anyone want to read for us?
No. The chief priests and the whole council kept trying to obtain false testimony against Jesus in order that they might put him to death, and they did not find any, even though many false witnesses came forward. But later on, two came forward and said, "This man stated, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days.'"
All right. Now, you and I know that Jesus never said that. He talked about the temple of his body. These guys added "of God" here to it. Two words can make an otherwise true statement false, and that's what it was. But what was going on inside the house with Jesus? Was this conducted as a trial? It was sort of a semi-trial, but the only problem is the outcome had already been determined. The only question was how to get there. So they're looking for false witnesses to get them there, and they can't even find two liars who agree until it's, you know, the way into the process here. And then the actions of Caiaphas come up. Caiaphas gets exasperated with what's going on, and he finally just asks, "Jesus, are you the Christ?" And when Jesus, in effect, says, "I am, it is as you say," and consider especially the passage in Mark along that line, Caiaphas tears his robe, which, if you'll check it out in Leviticus 10, was specifically forbidden under Old Testament law. The high priest could not ever do that. He did it. And then he convicted Jesus of what? Blasphemy, which is going to have what kind of standing with the Roman authorities? None at all. It's completely empty. And so what problem do they now have at the house of Caiaphas? They'll deal with this early the next morning. How are we going to get our objections to this man translated into something that the Roman governor might agree with us about? See, they don't have the right to carry out the death penalty themselves. Only the Roman government does. But they've already decided we want the death penalty. So now they've got to be willing to scheme to get that. And so it's an interesting thing. Some of this we're going to be talking about in our service a little bit later. So you guys should already be up on it. You can read your bulletin while I'm doing that part of it. Thank you guys for being with us today.